Let's go ahead and get started. This morning we are in Matthew 2, and I'll be surprised if we get finished, and I'm going to try to cut down what I already know down to just the bare basics this time, because there's so much here in this chapter to try to encompass. And all of this is going to sound familiar. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem. And you see the little picture I've got up here that we think of the three kings, right? Okay. Well, we didn't hear anything about no stable, did we? Heard nothing about the census. Don't know why. They're from Nazareth. What are they doing in Bethlehem? Well, Luke tells us all that. So putting these Gospels together, we come together and understand more. And we also, Luke never talks about them going off to Egypt. Matthew does. Luke doesn't. So, you know, are they contradicting each other, or did one find it important and the other one didn't find it important? I'm not real sure, but I do want to kind of let you know, and I'm sure most of you already realize this, that the picture that you see, let me see where we are here. First off, let me just say, this is from our Google Maps. They didn't have the Google Map. But how far is Bethlehem from Jerusalem?
About six.
Yeah, about a half, 6 miles. It's a suburb. Now, it wouldn't even be Donaldson from Nashville. I think that's even farther than that. So it's Bethlehem's really pretty close. And Bethlehem is a place, well, it's where King David was from. But it's also a place where the religious people would be, because they're right down from Jerusalem. So in Jerusalem, you would find all the religious people of the day. But then down in Bethlehem, you would too, because it's part of it's where David is from, and so it's got that territory. So these are like the right kind of people. I wouldn't want to say Belmead, but this is the Bible Belt kind of area that all of these people would have been the right people for Jesus to be with. Nazareth, not so much. We'll talk about that here in a minute. When we talk about Jesus' birth, we normally think, oh, he's in the stable, he's, you know, with all the animals and stuff, and the shepherds come, and the shepherds do come. We don't hear about that here, but the shepherds came. This is really interesting. The shepherds come first, who were just common, lowly people. Then the Magi come, and the Magi don't come when he's in the stable as a little baby. We know that, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We know that he would have looked a little bit more like this.
Yeah.
He'd probably under 2 years old, because you realize that Herod, as I'm going to read here in just a minute, when he's talking to the kings, and we call them kings, we don't know. We know that they are wise men. We think that they are probably in the line of Daniel, along that same type of thing. You remember when Daniel went off to Babylon, to the east, where these guys come from, exiled, that Daniel became a, quote, wise man, an astrologer, an astronomer. I mean, he looked at the heavens. He was looking for meaning in heavenly things, and he was also doing all kinds of, quote, wise things. Well, he established those wise men, and we believe that these guys were probably descendants of that, or they were, you know, part of that same type of movement. Because why would they care? If I said to you, let's all go to Georgia because the king of the gypsies is there, you'd probably go, why? Why would people from the east want to come to Jerusalem looking for a king of the Jews? The Jews were a hated people. They were a maligned people. They were contentious. They were defeated. They were being powered by the Romans at that time. They were being overrun by the Romans. So why would anybody want to see the king of this decimated group of people?
Well, Babylonia, though, come from, you know, one of their main things about them when I studied Daniel was they loved education. They read everything. And I think this would, well, they still could be from Daniel. I'm not saying they're not. But I think their look for education and for more knowledge of everything probably lured them to this. They had these readings from somewhere.
Right.
So they knew, and of course they had the book of Isaiah to help them to study all this. So.
And they thought at this time, it was fairly common knowledge that the Messiah, And these people probably had a Jewish lineage, whether they were practicing Jews or not. They probably had a Jewish lineage because of Daniel and the other ones that had been exiled over into Babylon, that if the Messiah was coming back and they had this knowledge, wouldn't they want to find out about it? Wouldn't they want to be led to this? So, let me just catch up with my notes a little bit. So anyway, we know that it would probably be, Jesus would have probably been under 2 years old, but he probably wasn't an infant at this particular time.
Right. Right. How do you think Herod found out about it? Just from people talking to him?
From him. From him saying, I'm going to read it to you right now. This would always help if you would read this before you come in here. That way you would not ask me that question. Let me read a little bit farther so Lisa can catch up with us. Verse 2. Where is he who has been, verse 1. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Judah, in the days of Herod the king. This gives us a time placement. We think that Jesus, I know this doesn't make sense because chronology is horrible in the Bible, and don't get all hung up on this, but we're probably talking about 4 BC. Now, how do you do that when Jesus is supposed to be the Mark? Just trust me, it's probably a little bit earlier than the actual zero he was born. Okay, so we're thinking probably about 4 BC, but that gives us a time period to go with, and also a time period when Herod dies tells us when they came back from Egypt and approximately how old Jesus would have been, you know, give or take. So you've got a place in secular history that gives you a time when Jesus was born. That's pretty important. Verse 2, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. And when Herod the king heard it, he was troubled. When he heard it from the kings. These kings, you got to get this in your mind. If I just showed you three camels and three guys walking across the desert, probably not how that happened. They probably had 30, 40, 50, 100 people all coming to Jerusalem. And they would have probably got off and been expecting to see billboards and banners. The king is here. All hail to the king. And when they walked up to the first guy, they say, hey, where's the king of the Jews? The guy's going to go, huh? So they finally, you know, let's go through the proper channels. Let's go to the king. They get to Herod and they said, where's the king of the Jews? What you talking about? And so the king, and right said, and this I'm sure it tells us here in a minute, verse 4, and gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he began to inquire of them where Christ was to be born. And they said to him, in Bethlehem of Judah, for so it has been written by the prophet, verse 6, and you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Judah, for out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Verse 7, then Herod secretly called the Magi and ascertained from them the time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and make careful search for the child. And when you have found him, report to me that I may come and worship him. Yeah, right. You think he's going to do that? Heck no. Let me give you an idea of who Herod was. You know that Herod built a temple, right? Herod built this big, huge, gorgeous, that's Solomon's temple, this big, huge, gorgeous temple mount area. He also built a lot of other things in Israel. He was a great builder. He was not, however, a Jew. He was an Edomite. He wanted to be a Jew, and he wanted to be included as the Jews. But this is the funniest thing that I've ever seen. Let me find it. Barclay reminds us what a bloody, violent ruler Herod was. He had no sooner come to the throne than he began by annihilating the Sanhedrin. He slaughtered 300 court officers. He murdered his wife, Marianne, his mother, Alexandra, his eldest son, Antipater, and two other sons, Alexander and Astrobulus. I can't find the thing that I'm really looking for. There's a place in here where Caesar Augustus, I believe, is over. He's the ruler of Rome at that time. He's the head of Rome. And so this guy, Herod, thank you. Herod reports back to him. And he wanted to be a Jew really, really bad. But the Caesar in Rome had said it would be better to be a pig of Herod than a son of Herod, because he wouldn't kill a pig, because he wanted to be, I know. And it's really kind of a play on words, because in Greek, they look fairly similar. The word for son and pig look very similar. So it was almost a play on words that he was doing. But he was very accurate, because you can see when Herod died, he had had a bunch of officials thrown into prison, like another 300 or something. And he got kind of dementia towards the end. And he said, when I die, I want all these people to be killed. And the reason was he wanted somebody to cry when he died. He knew that they would cry and all their families would cry when he died. So he's a very heartless man. And you can see here in verse 9, and having heard the king, they went their way, and lo, a star, which they had seen in the east, went on before them until it came and stood over where the child was. And having heard the king, they went their way, and lo, the star, this is going to be a different, read me that from a different version.
When they heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them until it came and stood over where the young child was.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of something different. Anyway, one of the commentators says this is where it is believed that the halo comes from. You know, when you see the halo behind in the religious things, that the star was directly over Jesus, and that's where they get that idea of that halo of or whatever. A lot of people say that it was a comet or a supernova or whatever, but when they first saw it, they knew that something had happened in the east, and they come to the east. Well, they go where? To Jerusalem, because it's where the religious organization is for the Jews. So it would have to be, that would be the natural place. And then after Herod says, no, it's probably in Bethlehem, then the star probably guided them right to where Jesus was. I mean, it's a miracle of God, obviously, that they were able to find exactly where the child was born.
See, I had read talk about the star, that there were some that believed and were saying that in those days, most of your kingdoms and stuff had a constellation in the heavens that represented their country or their kingdom. And that that the Israel, that it was the lamb, Aries,
mm-hmm.
And that at that time a new star appeared within that constellation. So therefore, there was a king born in whatever country or kingdom it would have been if they saw this.
Oh, wow!
That symbolized a king. A new king was born in that kingdom.
Well, I had not heard that.
So that was one theory that I read somewhere. They were saying that when they first saw it, they discovered a new star in that constellation, so that's why they hid it there.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Anybody else? Oh, when we're talking about the three wise men, Lisa and I just went on this river trip, right? There is a cathedral in Cologne. This is the entrance to the cathedral in Cologne. And inside that cathedral, I love going into cathedrals. I'm sorry, I could give you 1,000 pictures inside. But that's what it looks like on the inside. And it has this box. Y'all know what's in that box? Supposedly. In the early days, Catholics were really big on relics. Supposedly, the skulls of the three wise men are inside here. 20,000 people a day go into this church and visit this church in Cologne, one of the largest churches in the world. And they actually stole these from another place in Italy that had them, relics, bones, whatever. All over Europe, you would find a splinter and it would be on a cushion and it was part of the cross and it was, or bones of first century saints, and I mean, just crazy. But anyway, this is a really beautiful gold box, and it sits right at the very front of the church.
Wow.
And there it is. So that that was my our little contribution to this. And there's Lisa, wait, Lisa, on the bridge across. Those two spires right there are the church of Cologne in Germany. And then there we are having a good time out in front of the spires, you know, with my little cell phone trying to take a picture in the rain.
Best I remember. The really main building that wasn't bombed during World War II.
Right.
And it is a target to know where they were bombing.
It actually got hit 14 times, I learned today. And there was a tank battle out in front with the German Panzers and Pattons group.
Wow.
And the tank that got blown up, one of them killed three guys, three Americans. But then they came in and were able to get that other tank, and they left the other tank that they killed the Germans in, they left that there for the remainder of the war or whatever, sitting in front of the cathedral as a reminder that they had been liberated from it. But she's right. There was nothing left of the city. The city was completely gone except for this church after World War II. They just bombed it to smithereens. We bombed it to smithereens. But they used that church as a siding because it was so tall. They knew where to hit everything around it. But
that up there, that's some work being done.
Yeah, and they do work continuously. On all these cathedrals, this one was started in 1248, I think. And after 200 years, they had built a small little chapel. And this wasn't completed until 1994, if I'm not mistaken. So it was finally completed then. But, you know, as they say, as soon as they complete it, then it's constant renovation. It's constant. Every place that we went to, they had, they had construction going on. So I guess if you're a stonemason or whatever, then you pretty much you're set for life. There was one building where we went, or a church that we went to, and this guy, it had, 6,000 people in the entire town, and he built a church that would hold, 30,000 people. And it was kind of a folly, but everybody said, and it takes, 500 years to build or whatever, so they said, how could he be sure that his church would be built? And I said, he would set the foundation, and then they would have to build it that way. And sure enough, that's what he did. He put down the foundation, which was way too big for this area, and then they started building in increments, but he had already laid out the foundation, so they had to finish up with what his plans were. So knowing that he's not going to live 500 years, how do you ensure that it doesn't happen? There's the same place from our boat at night, the same cathedral. And this is coming up next. And they came, wait a minute, and having heard the king, verse 9, having heard the king, they went their way, and lo, the star was there, led them to the place. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And they came into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother. I want you to notice, they didn't say, and they found Mary with her child. They found the child. He's preeminent. He is the focus of this story that Matthew is telling. He is the focus of the worship that is coming. He is the focus of the gifts that are given. Jesus is the focus. And they came into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. And opening their treasures, they presented him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed on their own for their own country another way. You've probably heard a lot of sermons. Why gold, frankincense, and myrrh? I'll let y'all tell me.
Gold represents purity.
And it's something you would give to a king. If you were going to another kingdom, you would give them gold and jewels and that type. It's a gift worthy of a king. I personally like flowers to give to people because I can get them at Kroger's and they're cheap. But if I was going to see a king, you probably shouldn't carry him flowers. You should probably carry him gold. Frankincense? What was frankincense used for? Frankincense was used in the temple for that pleasing aroma, that scent that rises up to heaven. So it's a priestly gift. It's a gift that you would give to a priest, the frankincense was. Myrrh, I mean, if I was going to do it in this present day, I would hand you a bottle of embalming fluid. So can you imagine you come to somebody's child and you say, here's some embalming fluid for you, and you put it down. Well, they would wrap a dead body in the myrrh. They also used the myrrh. It was very expensive. All of these gifts were very, very expensive. But the myrrh, was also used when Jesus is on the cross and they were mixing the things. They offered him myrrh mixed with wine or whatever, and it would have deadened the pain. Yeah. It was a deadening agent, and he refused the deadening agent. That's somewhat important, but it's a symbol of kingliness, priestliness, and the death that was to come. Where the kings probably didn't know that, or the wise men, or whoever they were, probably didn't know that. In the second century was when we first see the use of that. This was probably kings, and not just magi, not just wise men. And they, because there's a, and I've got 7 pages of notes, and it's hard for me to find things. I keep underlining and all that, but it was thought that there's a place in the Old Testament where it talks about kings will come and worship him, and that's the reason this second century theologian said these were probably kings, but we refer to them as wise men, not kings. But in our minds, we think kings, don't we? Because we've seen enough nativity scenes with all our kings all dressed up about, 3 foot high. Verse 13. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise and take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him. Verse 14. And he arose and took the child and his mother by night and departed for Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that was spoken by the Lord through the prophet might be fulfilled, saying, out of Egypt did I call my son. That's Hosea 11. So that is a fulfillment. Also, Matthew, remember we talked about last week? Matthew is really big on establishing the kingship of Jesus and using Old Testament prophets to establish the kingship of Jesus. So he's looking at Jesus as a king of the Jews, and a savior of his people. And he uses Old Testament over and over again. I'm going to throw you a curve here in a couple of minutes. But let's continue on. Verse 16. Then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and in all its environs from 2 years and under, according to the time which had been ascertained from the Magi. Now let me just stop right there. We have no confirmation in secular history that there was a massacre of children in Bethlehem. Now remember I told you, Bethlehem's a really small little enclave. It's a very small little village. To kill all the male children under 2 years of age at that time might have been half a dozen. Still horrible, but considering what he did to all the, officials and that type of thing, the daily paper probably just went, so? I mean, it probably wasn't a big deal. It wasn't big enough to be mentioned. It wasn't something that they would have written down in history that Herod killed a bunch of kids. So that was not uncommon for him. Verse 17, then that which was spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled, saying, a voice was heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be comforted because they were no more. And that was spoken about when they went off into exile. But he's using Rachel's weeping as a national catastrophe for these children being killed. Verse 19, but when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, arise and take the child and his mother and go into the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. This actually is a picture. There's a lot of really good images, but this is them coming into Egypt. This is a picture of them, the drawing of them coming into Egypt.
How long between the decree to kill all the children and Herod's death was it?
And I'm not sure.
Okay.
But we know he comes back into the temple by 12.
Right.
So that's, I don't think we have any way of knowing. And I don't know where he went to in Egypt. Nobody does. But Alexandria was, in my mind, Alexandria was a very learned place. Joseph's pretty smart. I mean, he knows he's got this king. He knows he's got, God has told him, this is the Savior of the world. take good care of him. You know, and the fact that, that these magi came, and when they came, they gave the gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They could trade, be able to set up a new life in Egypt for a little while and be able to travel and do all those kinds of things. God had prepared all this for him so that he would be able to do what God had asked him. Now, if you want to go to Alexandria from Jerusalem, I was really surprised. You evidently go down to the all the way down and then cut over to Cairo and then up to Alexandria, or you can fly there. They didn't have that option, but you could fly there, and it takes 5 hours. Otherwise, it's going to take 11 hours to drive, and I'm sure it would have taken months to go across. And they may have just gone straight over into Egypt. They're all Roman territories, but Herod was in charge of Israel. And so they had to get away from Herod because he's the one that wanted to kill them. Now, when he comes back, Herod's son is no longer over all of Israel. He's just over Judah. And he's still so hated that and they're still really afraid. Let's continue to read. We're going to finish this. Verse 21. And he arose and took the child and his mother and came to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judah, not over all of Israel, but over Judah, in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And being warned by God in a dream, he departed for the regions of Galilee, and came and resided in the city called Nazareth, that what was spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled: he shall be called a Nazarene. Okay, here's your challenge for this week. Find that. It's not in the Bible.
What?
That he shall be called a Nazarene. He's quoting Old Testament prophets. And I'm going to go through this really quickly. Hold on, let me get to this part too. I wanted to give you a few more. This is how far Nazareth is. It's 2 hours and 36 minutes by car. I'm sure quite a bit more. And Jerusalem, remember, was just 6 miles. Bethlehem was just 6 miles from Jerusalem. There's no place that we can find in the Old Testament where it says he shall be called Nazarene. However, he was identified. Have you got it?
Well, in Judges 13:5, now it says, "For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, no razor shall come to his
head." Nazarite.
Yeah, wait a minute. This is, wait a minute.
That's a Nazarite.
Okay, yeah, never mind. This is Samson.
And some, right, and some people believe that because of this, there's a couple of different theories. And I want to try to give you all those so that you have them kind of in your back pocket, maybe if you can remember them later. Some people think they might have gotten confused. He might have gotten confused and said Jesus was going to be a Nazarite, if you remember, was someone who consecrated themselves to God for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, something like that, where they would not have any wine, any raisins, any grape. They would not cut their hair. They would not shave, and they were go near a dead body. And so they were consecrating themselves to God, and that was a Nazarite. Now Samson was a Nazarite from birth.
I didn't know what I went through.
Right, and a lot of people think that that's where this comes from. Others think that that the Nazarene part was a common knowledge among many prophets, not written down in one prophetic verse, because he says that what was spoken through the prophets. The other one says prophet. So this was kind of a common knowledge that he would be a Nazarene. If you know, there's a good side of the tracks and there's a bad side of the tracks. Nazareth is on the bad side of the tracks. Why? He's not up here with all the religious people that are down in Jerusalem. He's up here with a bunch of Gentile people and a few Jews mixed in, but not real devout Jews, because they got to go so far to get down here to Jerusalem to go to High Holy Days and that kind of stuff. They're not as devout as the people in Jerusalem would have been. But as Joseph is heading to Jerusalem, going to the right place, God says, why don't you turn aside and go someplace else? And so they wind up going back to Nazareth. When he tells Mary, hey, we're going to go back to the place where everybody knows that you said you were a virgin, you had this child, and we were unmarried, do you think she wanted to go back there? No, she did not want to go back there. But they went where God told them to go. So he is in this obscure place, looked down upon. When they called him, when they said, "You're a Nazarene," they weren't saying it with a sense of pride. They were saying it as a scorn, as a spit into the dust. "You're a Nazarene. You're a horrible person. You're no good." You know, when they went to, I can't remember which apostle it was, but he says, "Did anything ever good come out of Nazareth?" Because that's like, are you kidding me? Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or whatever. I mean, you know, it's a derogatory term to say that you're... When he meets him, when Jesus meets Paul on the road and blinds him, he said, "I am Jesus of Nazareth." He's making sure that people understand he's humble, he's holy, he's meek. He comes for the Gentile, he comes for the Jew. He comes for this people that need to be represented, not just for the holy people that are in Jerusalem. And it's a very humbling thing that the first people he comes to are the shepherds, and then later the kings come and worship. This was such an abbreviated version of Matthew 2. But if you read it some more, you'll get a lot more out of it. Questions, comments? Thank you. It's a really exciting chapter, and there's so much more there. And you got to go to Cologne with me. What do you think?
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the maps, too.